And they run through our ass like shit through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
It's ridiculous that they do it. That was a huge colony. Well, we didn't miss it. You know, the typical rah, 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 zip, boom, bah, boo.
You don't cuss. You don't drink. So what are your vices?
I have been known to chew a bit of tobacco when I get a little tired or watching film.
Hey, I'm Coach O. I just love my Hummer. I have my Hummer. You need a Hummer? Tell them about it, JoJo.
They've won the biggest championship, and that's the championship of life.
Welcome into the latest That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton, a.k.a. SEC Mike, joined as always by my big volunteer cousin, Shane Big Orange Vol Sheridan. How's it going, Shane?
Hey, buddy. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good.
Oh, we're getting close, Mike. It's almost football time.
Yeah, that's kind of the best part of, you know, what's going on over here. This is literally the last weekend until there's no football on. So next weekend we'll have the Hall of Fame game, I think, is actually on Thursday, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
And for the next 6 months, we're going to be having football every weekend for, I mean, this is basically the best time of year right now.
I'm looking forward to it, brother. We got them, they're reporting to camp next week, right?
They are, so that'll be at the end of the week. I know Tennessee reports Thursday, as does Alabama, and I don't believe the pads will really go on until the second or third practice, but, you know, even if guys are just showing up and doing some conditioning, and I know Tennessee and Alabama both have their fan days this weekend, so a lot of excitement, a lot of things for the fans to get into, and it's finally here.
I like to call this prayer season. You just pray that they stay healthy and they stay out of trouble.
And that's something that Tennessee has not been able to do the last couple of years, but they finally have a strength coach, so maybe they can do it this time around.
That's right. We had a good spring practice, and knock on wood, everything seemed to do all right there. So hopefully, we're in better shape this year than last, so, you know, but you never know.
All right, so one of the main topics I wanted to talk about today on this episode, BetOnline released odds for the first coach to be fired. And that's, you know, that's obviously one of our favorite topics on this show. So I'm going to play our little intro here. Hot seat coaches heading into 2018.
Oh my God, we're burning alive!
Real hot. Hot in this is my shorts. I can cook things in it. You know, clutch cook it.
Can you tell me what it feels like?
Fool, it's hot. I told you again. Were you born on the sun? It's damn hot.
All right. Thanks again for Shane for that fire edit. I mean, that gets better each time I listen to it. I don't know about you guys, but it's pretty amazing right there.
Well, it's a fun topic because there's, you know, every year we've got coaches on the hot seat, and this year's no different. What are those odds looking like?
Yeah, so no surprise at the top of the list. It's the guy that everyone knows is on the hottest seat in the SEC, Ed Orgeron at plus 225. He is currently sitting on the hottest seat in the SEC, according to BetOnline. Now, of course, these are odds to be the first coach fired. So first coach to be fired, Ed Orgeron. Do you agree with that, Shane?
I don't know, man. I'm curious. What? I'd like to do the breakdown of the list here. I want to hear who's the top three.
Okay, number two on the list, we've got Missouri's coach Barry Odom, and he is at plus 250, so he is just behind Ed Orgeron. And, of course, Missouri, you know, they finished last season winning six regular season games in a row, so I'm not surprised to see Barry Odom on a list like this, but at the top of the list, that's a little bit surprising. Number three on the list, we've got Derek Mason, Vanderbilt coach. He's at 5-1, which
I think that's kind of a surprise.
I mean, it could go either way. I mean, Vanderbilt's not been very good recently. They keep beating Tennessee, but you know what does that really say about anything? Everybody beats Tennessee these days, but at the same time, the expectations are not quite the same at Vanderbilt.
Breaking down those three, you know, can you, real quick, just for the audience and myself, can you read the first five games for each one of those coaches?
Sure. So Ed Orgeron, he's got the hottest seat in the SEC, according to BetOnline. his LSU team opens against Miami in Arlington, so that could potentially be a really tough game. After that, LSU returns home for Southeast Louisiana. That should be an easy W.
Yeah.
Then they travel to Auburn the third week of the season. That'll be extremely tough. They return home for Louisiana Tech, and then the last game of that stretch is at home for Ole Miss, which is, of course, a big game for Ed Orgeron, but his LSU programs have had no problem with LSU. So what do you make of that first five-game stretch?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why he's on the hottest seat, because he's got some pretty big marquee games there in the first five stretch. And, you know, if he drops did you say Miami was the opening?
It is, yeah, and that's in Texas, Dallas, Texas.
I mean, if he drops Miami and Auburn, I mean, golly, yeah, it could be. And then at that point, what's going on week five? It could be. I could see him being out just because of the big games that he's got coming up that early in the season. Plus, you know, people have been talking all offseason about the hot seat. The thing about LSU, though, is they're already paying a coach. You know, they're already and now they're looking at maybe a buyout for a second coach.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing why I would be afraid to make that bet, is just because you're talking millions of dollars. I mean, and to have somebody already lined up to come in, you know, so that early in the season. That's why I'm kind of steering clear of Coach O, just because the money situation. But I tell you what, if he drops three of those five, yeah, he won't make it to week six. What week's Alabama?
Alabama on that week is all the way down. It is the 10th week of the season, but the 9th game for LSU.
Okay, yeah. So if they're going to make a move, I was just going to say, if they're going to make a move, it'll be earlier than later, you know, in my opinion. So I really think, though, there's just a lot of money tied up with these coaches. I don't think he'll be the first one to go.
Okay, so let's go over Missouri's schedule. Barry Odom, number two on this list. Again, he's at plus 250, so not far off behind Ed Orgeron. Missouri opens at home against UT Martin. That should be an easy win. Then they have another home game against Wyoming, which Wyoming is actually probably a little bit better than the casual fan realizes, but Missouri should still beat that team. Then they play at Purdue, and Purdue beat their ass at home last year. Missouri lost that game 35-3 last year, so they need to show some progress there. And then Missouri returns home for the fourth week of the season. They play Georgia, and then they get a bye week, and then they go to South Carolina. So, I mean, there's a realistic chance that Missouri is 2-3 after five, and I would not, you know, this people are going to think this is crazy. I would not rule out them being 1-4, because I'm really low on Missouri, and Wyoming actually does have they have a coach that was at the FCS level. He was I don't know if you're familiar with North Dakota State, I think it's called, but they're basically the team that wins the national championship every year at the FCS level. Their coach went to Wyoming, and he's built that into, I think he's gone back-to-back bowl games for the first time in maybe program history. So, I mean,
if he drops the Purdue game, if he drops a Wyoming game, and obviously loses to Georgia, that's kind of the one I'm leaning toward, because you got a bye week coming up. That'd be a good time to say, hey, we're making some changes, you know, and try to salvage the season. So I'm really tuned in on the Purdue Wyoming game, and I know that sounds crazy, but there's a little hype going on with Missouri. You know, they did start out projected 7-win season, and now it's what was it 7.5, and now it's down 6.5. You know, so I don't know. It's trending in the wrong direction, and if he drops a few games early, he may be on the way out. That's kind of my front runner as far as first coach out.
Yeah, and we've kind of joked about it before on a previous episode, but Derek Dooley is obviously on that staff. We don't know how that's going to pan out. He could be a terrible hire. Or another way to look at it is, if Barry Odom does lose his job, you know, Derek Dooley does have head coaching experience, so they do have a candidate on that staff that has sat in that seat in the SEC. I don't know if that you know, leads to schools firing coaches, you know, if that makes it an easier decision or not. But it seems like we've seen that a number of times in the past, you know.
Well, it was an interesting hire to bring in somebody that does have head coaching experience, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, say what you want at Tennessee. He still had the reins for a couple of years. And, you know, he knows the ins and outs and how to run a program. You know, of course, he kind of ran ours into the dirt. But, you know, it's kind of an interesting hire, you know, that he brought him in. I wonder if was that all Barry's idea, or do you even know how that Dooley talk even came about?
Well, yeah, of course, he's kind of sold it as it's his idea. But from what I understand, there were a number of other candidates he wanted to hire. But Missouri uh-huh. was not willing to make a financial commitment to some of the guys they wanted. I believe the number one guy on his list was a guy named Jed Fish, who I'm trying to think of his background. I think he was former Michigan offensive coordinator, and I believe he was at UCLA last year. And he's a noted quarterback guy, a guy with some NFL roots. That, from what I understand, that would have been a really good hire, but. Like I said, Missouri was not willing to make financial commitment to bring in a big-time offensive coordinator. So I think they had to kind of go down their list and just really come off with the off-the-wall topic of getting Derek Dooley in.
How much do you know anything about his contract? Like how many years he has left, buyout or anything like that? I'm just curious. I mean, if they're afraid to give an offensive coordinator money, I mean, they may not want to fire this guy. You know what I'm saying?
Are you talking Barry Odom?
Yeah. Did he do any type of, you know, extensions or anything like that? I mean, I don't know what his buyout looks like.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. They actually just gave him an extension, but it was not for much. He's got 4 years left on his deal, and he is the lowest paid coach in the SEC. So it's not like they have a ton of money tied up to him, but at the same time, Missouri, you know, the football program, I think, does all right. But the school is in a really bad financial spot. So,
yeah,
they may want to keep him. But, you know, it's always been my opinion that these SEC programs, you really shouldn't be hiring guys that have no experience and are unproven commodities, because we've seen it at basically any of these schools. I mean, if you hire a guy that can elevate your program, I mean, it turns into a cash machine. And there's just so much money being put into these schools. It doesn't make sense to me why anyone would ever hire a guy that is just basically an unknown. But for some reason, these schools keep doing it. I can't figure it out, you know?
It seems to me like they keep trying to find the diamond in the rough, you know?
Right.
Instead of just pony up and paying somebody. And it does kind of drive me nuts, too, because especially here at the University of Tennessee, you've seen it. You know, we went out, we spent a little money on a flashy player or a flashy coach, didn't pan out, and then we got conservative, you know. Even Lane we didn't give that much money to. When we had, at that time, the opportunity to give, you know, a ton of money to a big-name coach, and I don't know. It seems like they're conservative when they don't need to be at times, you know?
Right. And I think that, you know, mindset leads itself to coaches leaving anyway. Like when Vanderbilt, you know, they hit the jackpot there with James Franklin, but they couldn't hold on to him. They weren't willing to make a full commitment to that football program. So I just think, you know, if you hire, it doesn't even have to be completely off the wall, but say Kentucky makes a decision to move on from Mark Stoops and hires like Mike Leach and gives him whatever he wants.
Yeah.
I think that's a great move for a Kentucky.
Yeah, no, I agree. I totally agree. And Missouri, like you said, they're hurting for money. It wasn't just 2 years ago, they were selling out the dorm rooms for full fan experience, you know?
Right.
I mean, do you think SEC made a mistake bringing them boys in the league?
Well, I mean, I understand why they did it from a television and exposure point of view, but that is no longer really relevant with TV contracts shrinking in value. And, you know, I don't know if I would go as far to say mistake, but I would think they possibly regret that. And I don't know if a team like Clemson would have been willing to come, but
right.
Obviously in hindsight, it would have been wise to add a program like that. But again, their logic was to expand the reach of the SEC network of their television coverage.
Right.
And adding someone like Clemson would not have done that because they obviously already have South Carolina. So,
well, maybe in a future podcast we can kind of jump into the expansion of the SEC, because I that's a topic I'd like to talk about. But right now, yeah, like you said, we're talking about coaches getting fired. Odom's, he's up there on the list for sure. I just don't, again, it boils down to money, and I don't know if they're willing to just, you know, pay nobody, you know, just pay him to be on the, you know, be at the house. So who's the third, Mason?
Mason's at 5-1. Let's run down this complete list one time.
Okay, yeah.
Matt Luke at Ole Miss, he's at 6-1. Mark Stoops at Kentucky's at 7-1. And then here's a big gap here. Gus Malzahn at Auburn, he's at 20-1.
There's your boy.
Will Muschamp, South Carolina, he's at 20-1. Jeremy Pruitt, Tennessee, he's at 20-1. Joe Moorhead, Mississippi State's coach, he's at 33-1. Chad Morris at Arkansas, 33-1. And then the final four, they're all at 50-1. Dan Mullen at Florida, Nick Saban, Alabama, Kirby Smart, Georgia, Jimbo Fisher, Texas A&M. And I think basically what this says is those last ones at 50-1, you're betting on a huge scandal, because I don't think it, none of those guys are going to be fired immediately. But, you know, I did want to make this one point, which is pretty interesting. The guy that technically won this list last year was Jim McElwain, which I think that would have been unheard of last off season. And he was at 20-1. And that's where Gus Malzahn, Will Muschamp, and Jeremy Pruitt are. And you teased it already. My guy Gus at 20-1. I think that's the best bet on here if you're trying to get the most value.
Well, and that's the thing, you know, these three, like for instance, LSU, were expecting a decent year, not a horrible year, not a great year, but a decent year. So to lose your job first in the SEC, something really bad has to happen. Now, when you look at coaches like Auburn's, you know, Gus Malzahn, or I can't really say Nick Saban because he's been there forever, but some of these teams that have really, like Kirby Smart, which, again, I don't see that happening. But if all of a sudden they drop, you know, 8 games, 7 games, something just dramatic, then it seems like those are the ones that get, you know, the expectations for Jim just never panned out. And then on top of that, was one of the worst seasons Florida's ever had. So that's kind of what I look at. So if I'm putting my money on somebody, like you're talking about Gus, if he drops a few early, you know, the seat gets hot real quick down there, and then the thing can kind of, you know, if like you said, if he didn't pull it out against Alabama, if he didn't, you know, make it to the SEC championship, you know, he could have been the front runner for this list. So he's interesting. He's got a lot of heat on him. You know, he may not know it because he just got that contract extension, but Auburn's not the team to wait. And if they see no movement in the positive direction, then who knows, he may be the first one out.
Yeah. And we kind of ran down some schedules here. Let's look at Auburn's schedule. They open against Washington and Atlanta. We've talked about that game a number of times. I think any reasonable person could say that one could go either way.
For sure.
They come home for Alabama State. That should be an easy W. Then they host LSU, which beat them last year. Now, those two have had real troubles on the road against each other, so Auburn will be a huge favorite. But, you know, anytime you lose a game as a huge favorite, that's kind of what can get that ball rolling in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
They follow that the next week with Arkansas. That should be a win. Southern Miss at home should be a win. Then they travel to Mississippi State, which I think will have a very good team this year. They get Tennessee at home after that. They travel to Ole Miss, which Ole Miss may not be that good, but the Ole Miss-Auburn games over the years have been very, very close, particularly in Ole Miss in Oxford, so that could be a tight one.
Mm-hmm.
Auburn hosts Texas A&M. And here's an interesting stat for you. Since Texas A&M entered the league, the Auburn A&M series, the home team has never won.
So ooh.
Imagine A&M wins that and keeps that going. And then Auburn goes to Georgia. They host Liberty. Then they go to Alabama. I mean, there's a lot of tricky road games there and a couple tricky home games.
A lot of landmines laying around for old Gus.
So I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I'm just saying it could happen.
It could happen. Well, that's what surprised me, you know, that Mason's even on the list, you know, because Vanderbilt hasn't sucked. I mean, they haven't been great, but, I mean, it is Vanderbilt, you know, and it just seems like putting him on a hot – I see if they're going to get part ways with Mason, it's going to be at the end of the year, you know. He may be the first coach fired, but that's just because they didn't make a bowl game and it's December and they decide to part ways. I just don't see them getting rid of him halfway through the season.
Right, and I think at Vanderbilt, a win over Tennessee buys you a lot of time, and he's obviously got two of them back-to-back. So
I think
that does him a lot of goodwill there in Vanderbilt in Nashville.
Yeah, that sucks, but good for him, you know.
Okay, next topic I wanted to talk to you about. You know, like I said, we don't dive a ton into recruiting, particularly at this point of the year, because you know, I think it's worth monitoring to be sure, but what your commit list looks in early August, you know, late July, it could be completely different by signing day. But regardless of that, I think it is noteworthy two things here in the SEC East. Florida is really struggling. They currently have the 37th ranked recruiting class in the nation, and that's lower than any other first-year SEC coach. So, you know, I hear a lot of Florida fans make the argument that, you know, it's going to take time. Florida wasn't that good last year. But that argument doesn't hold water with me when you consider basically outside of Mississippi State, the other five programs that fired their coaches in the SEC, they all had terrible years too, and they're all out-recruiting Florida. So
absolutely.
Any concern there for what Dan Mullen isn't really doing on the recruiting trail?
Yeah, I mean, it is concerned because that's what you heard from Dan, you know. We've talked about this in other podcasts that he's got a great offensive mind. He's a quarterback guru, but he has trouble recruiting. And you would think at a university like Florida that practically recruits itself that it would kind of even out a little bit, but it seems to me like it's going the opposite direction. You would think with a new regime coming in, new potential, you know, selling the brand, you usually see this when a new coach comes in. It's exciting. It's the newest thing. It's the hype train builds up, but you're not getting that with the University of Florida. It's just that these recruits are not wanting to go there. And I don't know if it's a product of Dan or the SEC or you know, because where he's getting most of his talent, are they going to other universities? I mean, you follow recruiting a lot more than I do. You know, the ones that they were really close into, are they kind of sticking to like a Florida State or even Miami now that they're up and coming? Where are you seeing them going?
Well, that's a complicated question. You know, recruiting obviously for every school is different, but what Dan Mullen, like you noted, he's not really known as a terrific recruiter. I wouldn't say he's poor, because, you know, it's kind of ridiculous to say that Mississippi State, they may have the best roster they've ever had, and obviously he built them. But at the same time, most of his connections are in the state of Mississippi. He's been there for so long. So, and he was an offensive coordinator at Florida, but he didn't pull a lot of elite talent from that state to Mississippi State when he was there. So what Dan Mullen has tried to do is bring a national recruiting base back to Gainesville. And I think that's the right move to do, but he really hit hard California, and they're losing a lot of guys to teams on the West Coast. I think they hosted the number one recruit in the nation, but just this past weekend, just like Tennessee and most of these other schools, Georgia, Florida had a huge recruiting weekend this week because it was the end of the dead period, so they got to host all their top targets.
Right.
And they still didn't get a commit. Now they did. Well, they got one, but he was for the 2020 recruiting class, so he doesn't even.
Yeah.
And he was from Gainesville, so you know.
Well, it seems like he's really trying hard to be cool. Have you noticed? Like, I've noticed a lot of jokes about Butch 2.0.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he comes out with those new Jordans and trying to pump up the new brand, and it's just, I don't know. It's like he's trying too hard or something. He's not relating to these kids at all. You know, that's what it sounds like.
Yeah, and I think that's something that's been with him for a while. He's from, I believe, New Hampshire, so he's not a Southerner.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of plays, you know, he's obviously a very smart man, but I think, I don't know how well that plays, like you said, with young recruits. I know, you know, he's always been a big guy with his sneakers and everything, and obviously the recruits love that, but, you know, sneakers are not gonna get it done when
no.
We wanted to talk about on the flip side, Georgia is just killing it on the recruiting class. They just today, they landed a 5-star running back, the number 2 running back in the nation, and a 4-star from Baton Rouge, right from out from LSU. And when you're Florida and you have 4 4-stars committed, and you look at Georgia and they've got 5 5-stars and 9 4-stars, and that doesn't even consider looking up at Tennessee in the rankings, South Carolina in the rankings, like. And of course, Alabama's up there with 18 4-stars. You know, there's clearly a gap between Florida and the upper echelon of the SEC, and as long as they continue to struggle, that gap is only going to get wider.
That's right. I mean, because it's going to show on the field. It may not show next year or the year after, but there's a, you know, these guys have been giving these kids stars for a long time. And there's a huge track record for teams that get majority 5-stars. They stay competitive. And the ones that aren't, you know, typically drift to the bottom. And like you said, it may just be one season, maybe 2 seasons, but eventually it's going to show on the field. And at that point, you know, you have no hype. You have no reason for these recruits to come to your school. And then we're talking about Dan on the chopping block. So,
and I think, you know, one thing that is overlooked when talking about Florida heading into the coming season, I think people automatically assume that they're going to have a good defense because Florida basically always have a good defense. And it doesn't matter who they lose. They just seem to have another guy step up and be, you know, a great player. So they have earned that reputation to be sure, but Jim McElwain was not a good recruiter. And we've seen that play out with all his offensive guys. You know, he couldn't get anything out of them. And he lived off Will Muschamp's defensive guys. And now that McElwain is gone, Mullen is going to, and his program is going to be playing defense with McElwain's defensive recruits. That's not to say they're going to be terrible, because there still is some talent, but I question how deep they are, you know?
Oh, yeah. No. And you see this in other teams. We were talking about Dooley earlier. Dooley went 1 year without recruiting a damn offensive lineman,
mm-hmm.
you know? And it didn't hurt Dooley, but it did hurt Butch when he came in and he didn't have any depth at offensive line. So, you know, just because you come in and a team's been hot on defense, how many returning starters do they have, do you know? I don't even know how many.
Florida?
Yeah.
I think they're second in the nation. I think they've returned 17 starters, but I've always believed that that's a very misleading stat because, like we've said, Florida was not that good last year. So,
that's true.
You know, would you rather return all these starters that didn't do anything? Or, you know, if you look at Alabama every year, they've returned between 4 to 8 returning starters, and they go undefeated. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
I think that's a really misleading stat, but they do return a lot of talent, but they're all going to be playing in a new system under new coaches. So I don't buy into that being a huge indicator of what they'll do, but at least they'll be experienced. We can say that.
Well, that's why I kind of see, you know, that we're talking about that Emory. Is that his name?
Yeah, Emory Jones, the quarterback there from Florida.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if you see him sooner than later, just to kind of sell that, hey, we're starting over. We're getting behind this. So you got three more years with this quarterback, you know, kind of sell the future more than the present, you know. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see a quick quarterback change down there, because that's something that coaches like to do to kind of create that, you know, selling their brand that, hey, we're growing, we're getting better, we're a little bit better than last year. So expect a lot more younger guys to play this year.
Yeah, and that's even something that Dan Mullen teased at SEC Media Days, talking about, you know, the coming season will be, you know, not only about obviously the season ahead, but looking ahead to the future. And, you know, we kind of knocked him a little bit for that, but I think that's wise in a sense.
Yeah.
You know, let's say they drop a game or two in the SEC before November, or, you know, and then they go to that Georgia game. That's the last weekend of October. If they lose it, you know, if they lose two or three SEC games, there's no way they're going to win the East. So
right.
You may have a good point there. At that point, maybe they roll out Emory Jones and just, you know, if they play him the Final Four, he can still redshirt. And, you know, that there's something there to build upon for 2019.
So let me ask you this. What was his odds again? Was it 1 to 20 or 1 to 50?
Dan Mullen was at 50 to 1.
Ooh. Has any coach ever got fired after, I mean, like from a big school like that after one season?
Lane Kiffin.
Well,
no.
Yeah. Lane walked out on us. I burned a couch for Lane, you know?
Yeah, one and done is pretty unheard of.
Okay, so.
I couldn't imagine that. Like I said, those 50-1 odds, you're basically betting on a major scandal.
Okay. I don't think Dan will do that, but crazier things have happened. Well, that being said, you said Georgia had, what, 10 more five-star recruits sign up yesterday?
They added one five-star and one four-star. They have five five-stars total, which is by far the most in the nation at this point.
That's crazy. Fucking crazy.
And so check this out. Georgia signed the number one and the number three running back in the nation last year, and they just got a commit from the number two. So they're just loading up on offensive linemen and running backs, and it's just Alabama 2.0, you know?
Something else happened the other day that kind of piqued their interest, and that was Nick Saban getting a little contract extension.
That's true, and Alabama wisely sold it as a 8-year extension for Nick Saban, but in reality, when you already have 7 years left on your deal and you add 1 year, I mean, I guess you can sell that as 8-year extension, but that's fake news, you know.
I'm telling you, if Saban starts losing and Georgia starts out recruiting, don't be surprised if his days are numbered. But I am curious, when you see this contract stuff, you know, I mean, it's a state job. Does the complete contract, can you see it somewhere? Or?
Yeah, the figures are out there. What did you have a question on any of it?
Yeah, I'm curious about that fine print, like severance, and if he did quit, I mean, does he still get money? Or, you know, I'm just curious if any of that has changed. If they just said, okay, hey, we're giving you another year, we're going to pay you a little bit more this year, you know, give you some bonuses, that sort of thing. But is there anything deep in that contract that changed that could be, you know, kind of eyebrow raising?
Well, that I'm not particularly, you know, I haven't read the whole thing, but I do know that if he gets, let's say he gets fired and he does not have a scandal or anything,
mm-hmm.
Alabama has to pay him like a shit ton of money.
Okay.
But I think if he chooses to leave,
yeah,
I don't think he owes Alabama anything.
So, I mean,
he has no buyout in that regard, is my understanding. Like I said, they just updated this, so I could be wrong, but that's how it was prior.
So, like, I'm just saying, if Saban left right now,
mm-hmm.
he wouldn't owe Alabama any money. Alabama wouldn't owe him any money, correct?
That's correct, yes. And he could take another job.
Yeah, I'm just curious. Maybe there was some sort of severance package, retirement package worked in, or still can use the jet or something like that, you know?
Well, I know he's got – I don't know if you know this, but the – it wasn't Alabama, but it's like their booster club or whatever. They, mm-hmm. you know, like a contract or two ago, they like paid off his entire house. So he's – I mean, he doesn't have bills, and they still – they still have given him – he's going to make $8.3 million this year. He made 11 point something last year. And his new deal gives him a $800,000 bonus, or it adds $800,000 every year. So like in 2 years, he'll make 1.6 more and on and on. But
I'm telling you, man, these boosters down there got a ton of money. I wouldn't be surprised if something was worked off the books, you know. Just to ensure that he doesn't go to Texas or he doesn't go to Kent State or somewhere West Virginia, you know, just make sure that the last time he coaches at the University of Alabama, and maybe he told them, hey, I got 2 more years. We need to do this to make it look like I'm going to stay a little bit longer, but I'm on my way out and I want to leave you guys in a good place. And maybe that's why they worked on the contract. I don't know. It's just kind of fishy, you know, because like you said, there wasn't a lot of talk about Saban, you know, and his future this year. It was just kind of, it was the opposite. It's like he's going to be here forever, you know, all of a sudden. So I don't know, just kind of some little flags came up. Nothing may come of it, but then again, I've been wrong before.
Yeah, and all that commentary is you know, following years of people suggesting that he was going to end his career in the near future. So I think that narrative got out there, and I think it hurt him in recruiting a little bit. They lost several head-to-head battles to Georgia last year, mm-hmm. finished number 7 in the recruiting rankings. They're losing again, you know, recruits to Georgia.
Yeah.
Kirby Smart, I believe, is 43 years old. Nick Saban is 67, I think. I mean, that's a huge difference. So
yeah.
I'm sure that's being sold not only by Georgia, but by basically every SEC program. And I think that's the whole point of wanting to push this 8-year extension when it's really, it just for the life of me doesn't make sense to why you'd announce a 1-year contract extension when you have 7. It's not like he was
right.
going after any recruits and they're like, well, you may not be locked, signed up for my whole tenure. He already was, you know, so.
Right.
And that's
think about this. If you're recruiting for 4 years, you know, you're a year out, so you're looking at 5 years mm-hmm. that you're trying to convince these kids to come play with you. You have an 8-year deal, okay? So if Nick has plans on retiring in 2 or 3 years, he wants to give the impression that he's going to be whoever he's recruiting now, that he's going to be there. Because this is an 8-year deal. I'm telling you right now, year 6, he's not going to say, I got 2 more years. He's going to be out prior to. I'm thinking at least 3 years. So you want to subtract 5 years from this contract so it doesn't affect recruiting. So I'm thinking anytime in the next 3 years, Nick Saban's retiring.
Yeah, and that makes sense because like someone noted at SEC Media Days, there's only been one coach in the history of the SEC that coached into his 70s. I was not aware of that until they said that. And that, of course, was Steve Spurrier, who, you know, up in the middle of the season, quit. He just couldn't do it anymore.
For sure. And Nick will be the same way. I think he's seeing the writing on the wall. You know, the league is changing. Other teams are starting to jump up. It's a shame Georgia's not in the West because I think it would be a sooner departure than later, you know. But I guarantee if they meet Georgia – and I'm just saying, not saying that no other team in the East can compete, but obviously Georgia's, you know, the one everybody's looking at with these recruiting classes. But if they come out and they win 2 SEC championships in a row, then, you know, Nick doesn't want that. Nick wants to go out on top. You know, he hates to lose. So I think everything has a reason. And there was a reason that they did this, whether it was with the contract or something they work out with the boosters. But I'm telling you now, you subtract 5 years from the contract, that's kind of the timeline you're looking at Nick retiring. So I'm not saying that it's this year, but unless something just you know, drastically falls off or his health or something like that. But, you know, here in the next two or three years, don't be surprised if Nick hangs it up.
And I think we've been saying that for about 10 years.
Please, God, retire already.
All right. Well, I think that's a good note to jump off here. So thanks, thanks Shane, for joining me. Thanks for all the listeners out there tuning in. And give us 5-star hearts on iTunes if you don't mind. That helps the podcast.
All right, man. Well, it was a pleasure, and I think we'll end on that note.